There's going to be difficulties. There's going to be considerable opposition to the work of God. But yet within that, we need to not give ourselves over to that, but allow God to encourage us that we would press on and continue in the work.
Welcome to this Thursday edition of Equipping the Saints with Greg Lundstedt, pastor of Equipping Bible Church in Greer, South Carolina. And Greg, today we continue our look at the book of Nehemiah.
Yes, Dave, and indeed we're going to begin to see that Nehemiah cares deeply about the Lord's work. And today, this might just shine a light on where our hearts are concerning the work of the Lord. Our text is Nehemiah chapter 1, and we're looking at verses 1 through 4.
Well, thanks, Greg. And as always, if you have to miss a portion of today's broadcast, you can hear this entire program online at etsradio.org. That's etsradio.org. Now, let's join Greg for today's message.
Now, it happened in the month of Chislev in the 20th year, while I was in Susa, the capital, that Hanani, one of my brothers, and some men from Judah came, and I asked them concerning the Jews who had escaped and had survived the captivity and about Jerusalem. And they said to me, "The remnant there in the province who survived the captivity are in great distress and reproach. And the wall of Jerusalem is broken down and its gates are burned with fire." Now it came about when I heard these words, I sat down and wept and mourned for days. And I was fasting and praying before the God of heaven. Now, that's what we're going to look at today, but let's just continue and look at his prayer here. And I said, "I beseech thee, O Lord, God of heaven, the great and awesome God who preserves the covenant and loving kindness for those who love him and keep his commandments. Let thine ear now be attentive and thine eyes open to hear the prayer of thy servant, which I am praying before thee now, day and night, on behalf of the sons of Israel, thy servants." Don't forget that. "Confessing the sins of the sons of Israel, which we have sinned against thee, and I and my father's house have sinned. We have acted very corruptly against thee and have not kept the commandments, nor the statutes, nor the ordinances which thou dost command thy servant Moses. Remember the word which thou didst command thy servant Moses, saying, if you are unfaithful, I will scatter you among the peoples. But if you return to me and keep my commandments and do them, though those of you who have been scattered were in the most remote part of the heavens, I will gather them from there and I will bring them to the place where I have chosen to cause my name to dwell. And they are thy servants," notice that again, "and thy people whom thou dost redeem by thy great power and by thy strong hand. O Lord, I beseech thee, may thine ear be attentive to the prayer of thy servant and the prayer of thy servants who delight to revere thy name, and make thy servant successful today and grant him compassion before this man." Now I was the cupbearer to the king. It's very clear, as we will see, that Nehemiah understood that these Jews in Jerusalem were God's servants. And they were those who revered, they delighted to revere his name, just as Nehemiah did. We're going to see that. So how can we know if we truly care about the work of God? Well, I think, first of all, our interactions with our brothers and sisters should include a desire to know about his people and work. What is he doing in the context of the body of Christ? What is he doing? Let's take a look at our passage. Verse 1, "The words of Nehemiah, the son of Hakaliah." Now, it happened in the month of Chislev in the 20th year that I was in Susa, the capital, that Hanani, one of my brothers, and some men of Judah came, and I asked them concerning the Jews who had escaped and had survived the captivity and about Jerusalem. Here we have the book. It is named after Nehemiah. His name means Yahweh comforts, the Lord comforts. And he is identified as the son of Hakaliah, which means wait for Yah or wait for Yahweh. Those are good names. And Nehemiah, it's quite clear, is the one who wrote this book. Verse 1, "The words of Nehemiah," pretty clear. And throughout this book, we see the first person used quite a bit. I. We see him talking very clearly. He even includes we, I, and we. Now, the timing of this book, we have a very clear date given by Nehemiah. He says here, now it happened in the month of Chislev, in the 20th year, while I was in Susa, the capital. And if we look at chapter 2, verse 1, it says, and it came about in the month of Nisan, in the 20th year of King Artaxerxes. So when he says the 20th year, he's speaking of the 20th year of the reign of King Artaxerxes. Now this would be the son of the king Xerxes or Ahasuerus, who was married to Esther. That's what we think. And so then it's within the 20th year of his reign, and it is in a specific month. And this month of Chislev was November, December-ish of probably 445 BC, and then it would move into the rest of the book, which is centered around 444 BC. Now, what do we know about Nehemiah? Well, in the end of chapter 1, we see that he was the king's cupbearer. He was the cupbearer to the most powerful man in the world at this time, the king of the Persian Empire, King Artaxerxes. And a cupbearer was an official of very high rank in the royal court. And it was their duty to serve the drinks to the royal table, and because of fear of poisoning or whatever it might be, that person would have to be extremely trustworthy. And they would be those who would have to even test it themselves first. This position would not be given to anyone unless they were completely trusted and reliable. Nehemiah was a trustworthy and reliable man, evidently just because of the position he was placed in. But as we're going to see throughout this book, he was also diligent, faithful, a man of prayer, a man who trusted the Lord. He's a godly man, and as he identifies in chapter 1, he is the Lord's servant. He is a servant of the Lord. He sees himself as a servant while he's giving the king his drinks. Now, he's also going to go off and serve, as we're going to see, and help these Jews out, but he is a servant of the Lord. He is a servant of the Lord, and he identifies himself with those who delight in revering God's name. They delight in it. And there's not a lot of people who delight in revering the Lord's name. They delight in songs and singing and stuff, but they don't delight in seeing Christ exalted. But Nehemiah knew that's who his brothers and sisters were. Those who delight in revering the Lord, those servants. And so then, he was a good guy. Now, within this book, we're going to see, and I'm going to give you a general overview of the book, but really, the overview doesn't do it justice, so don't hold on to that. We'll see what it's about when we go through it. But basically, chapters 1 through 7 deal with the reconstruction of the walls that surrounded Jerusalem. We really deal with the reconstruction of that, but really, the spiritual issues and problems related to that and the overcoming of those things by faith in the Lord and trusting in Him. And then in chapters 8 through the end, that focuses on the spiritual reconstruction of the people, I believe. So with this in mind, take a look at our passage. The words of Nehemiah, son of Hakaliah. Now it happened in the month of Chislev in the 20th year. I was in Susa, the capital. Folks, he was in Susa, the capital. And it was during the 20th year reign. That was 445, a month of Chislev. This is in the wintertime. And so Susa was the capital of the Persian Empire. Capital of the Persian Empire. And on an interesting side note, Esther would have been in the same capital approximately 33 years earlier. So with that in mind, Nehemiah's in the capital. He's obviously performing the duties and responsibilities as cupbearer. And something happens. Verse 1, the words of Nehemiah, son of Hakaliah, now it happened in the month of Chislev in the 20th year while I was in Susa, the capital, that Hanani, one of my brothers, and some men from Judah came, and I asked them, notice he asked them, concerning the Jews who had escaped and had survived the captivity, and about Jerusalem. Here we have Hanani, this is Nehemiah's brother, and some men from Judah. They had come to Susa, this is the capital of the Persian Empire. And what does Nehemiah do? He asked them. And he asked them very specifically about those Jews who had been delivered from captivity, in this essence, by going. These would be the ones that had gone the first and second, and actually the ones that were left from the first, and in the second return under Ezra. And he's asking about them, and he's asking about Jerusalem. We're going to see it's very important. If you are a follower of the Lord, you want to know about Jerusalem. Later on, we're going to see it as the place that God chose to reveal his name, for his name to dwell. It's a very important place. And the earthly Jerusalem reflects the reality of a spiritual reality. It's a very important place. So he wants to know about those who survived the exile and had returned to Jerusalem. Now, this is at this point, as I mentioned, there were two returns before this. The first return was 90 years before that, so there, those guys are probably gone. But the second return here we see was with Ezra. So Nehemiah is inquiring. He's concerned. And it's interesting that by his inquiry, and thus, as we'll see, by his reaction, which we've read already, that Nehemiah probably was not expecting the report that he was given. By his reaction of mourning and praying and fasting, he wasn't expecting to have news like this. It's my thought he was probably expecting a good report. You know, those in exile who stayed there and had not returned, they were living a pretty comfortable life. It was more difficult to go and serve the Lord, actually. Isn't that the way it is? When you serve the Lord, it becomes difficult. If you don't want to serve the Lord, hey, comfy life, just for now at least. And so I believe he was concerned initially about them, how they're doing, but he didn't understand how bad it was, because his response shows that he was not expecting what he heard, because he's going to pray and he's going to make a request so that he can actually go help, as we will see. So then, Nehemiah is not only interested in the Jews, he's also interested about Jerusalem. Now, later on, he's going to quote the Lord, the place where I have chosen, verse 9, for my name to dwell. God chose to identify with the Jews, and thus Jerusalem, as we will see. That's where he put the temple, where he would have his name dwell. So Nehemiah is very concerned about it. He's concerned about the things of God. He's concerned about God's servants and their tasks that they're doing for the Lord, and he's concerned about the Lord's place where he has designated to bear his name, to have his name dwell. So then how can we know if we truly care about the work of God or if it's just lip service? Well, we need to see from Nehemiah's response that he was concerned. He was inquiring of them, how's it going? How's it going there? He was concerned about the work of God's servants in Judah and Jerusalem. His inquiry reveals that concern. And brothers and sisters, our interactions with one another are telling. What's important to us is what we talk about. If God's people and his work and his name are important, then we're going to be interested and when we talk to his servants about how it is going. How is the work of the Lord going in the context of this church or that portion or this and this? How's it going? How is the Lord doing in you guys? How's it going? Our interactions are going to show some type of a desire to understand and know. I tell you, it's always encouraging when I talk to believers who are interested about what the Lord is doing through the work of the ministry. It's a blessing to me because they're interested not in me, they're interested in the work of God in the ministry. And it's a blessing. And as we're going to see, when there are difficulties and threats, they're concerned and they pray. Just like Nehemiah is concerned and praying. You see, folks, if you're not serving the Lord or you don't desire to serve him, you got nothing to talk about regarding serving the Lord. But if you desire to serve Jesus, you're going to hang out with those who are serving Jesus. And that's going to be not all the time, but some of your conversations are going to be concerned because that's what is important to you. And so Nehemiah could have asked a whole bunch of questions, but he was concerned about the servants in Jerusalem and Judea and Jerusalem itself. In Acts chapter 14, we see when Paul and Barnabas had arrived and gathered to the church, this is Acts 14, 27, they gathered together and they began to report all the things that God had done with them. This is what God is doing. And they evidently wanted to hear it. And how he had opened the door of faith to the Gentiles. And they spent a long time with the disciples, it says. So then how can we know? We're going to want to be interested about his people and his servants. You know, if you're part of this body, you should be interested about how is the ministry of ETS going? How are things going? How is the preaching and teaching going? This is part of the ministry. We serve together. You're over there. We're over here. We're working together. How are these things going? There's going to be interest. Because as we're going to see, Nehemiah saw himself as a servant of the Lord. And he saw those in Jerusalem as servants, those who had sacrificed to go there to serve the Lord. And he's going to find out that things are not good. And it's going to tear him up because he identifies with them and with the Lord and his work. And the same thing should happen for us. Take a look. Notice Nehemiah exhibits a concern for the work of the Lord by his response. So he inquires, here he says, he inquired from them, I asked concerning, it's the middle of verse 2, concerning the Jews back in our passage, Nehemiah, who had escaped and survived the captivity, and about Jerusalem. And they said to me, the remnant there in the province who survived the captivity are in great distress and reproach. This is a report that is not a good report. It's a distressing report if you care about the work of the Lord and God's people. It's a distressing report. The term remnant, or literally those left, who had left captivity, that's how you could translate that, who are now in the province, out of captivity, there's some translation issues there, but they're in the province, that is, Judah was a province of Persia at this time. They are in one great distress. Now, you could literally translate this, in great evil. And then it says, and in reproach. Things were not good. One translator puts it this way, the remnant that remains from the exile there in the province are experiencing considerable adversity and reproach. Considerable adversity and reproach. It was tough for these Jews. They were in great distress. This word translated great distress or great evil speaks of opposition they were facing in context. And they were facing it certainly from the Samaritans, and they were facing it from Moabite and Ammonite and Arab foreigners that we're going to see later on in the book. You see, when you serve the Lord, when you are sold out to serve him, there's going to be opposition. And this opposition comes, as we'll see this, that every group that goes out of exile to serve the Lord faces opposition. They did back earlier, and they were right here, and we'll see it in this book. You see, God is a gracious God, a good God, but because of Satan, those who are in Satan's domain are enemies of God. Turn to Psalm 83. And as you turn there, what we're going to see is that when God's people are in distress as they're serving them, they need to be encouraged, and they need to be prayed for, and they need to be refocused on the Lord, and that's what Nehemiah is going to do. That's why we need to be aware of what's going on. You all should be aware whether I'm encouraged or discouraged as your pastor. You should be one to know that. You should be sensitive to that. And as we serve together, we should be aware and desiring how each of us are doing in the context of this ministry, not simply the day-to-day realities of this life that everybody has, whether they believe or not. Psalm 83, a song of Asaph. O God, do not remain quiet. O God, do not be still. For behold, thine enemies make an uproar, and those who hate thee, there you go, have exalted themselves. They make shrewd plans against thy people, and they conspire together against thy treasured ones. We've had that with our body. We've seen it. And he says here, they have said, come, let us wipe them out as a nation, that the name of Israel may be remembered no more. That's pretty serious, isn't it? For they have conspired together with one mind against thee, do they make a covenant. The tents of Eden and the Ishmaelites, Moab and the Hagrites, Gebal and Ammon and Amalek, Philistia with the inhabitants of Tyre, Assyria have joined with them. They have become a help to the children of Lot. Now we're going to see the children of Lot have a lot to do with the difficulty that's going to be in Nehemiah. We're going to see that. What did the Lord say in John 15? If the world hates you, know that it has hated me before it hated you. We got to know that. If you were in the world would love its own. But because you're not of the world, because I chose you out of the world, therefore the world hates you. Remember the word I said to you, a slave is not greater than his master. They persecuted me, they will also persecute you. If they kept my word, they will keep yours also. Now, we might get into some fatalistic attitude and say, okay, the world's going to hate me. It's going to be bad. Yes, it is. But within the difficulty, God wants to encourage us not to give up, not to be shaken up, but to trust him and to rejoice in him. The joy of the Lord is your strength. The Apostle Paul shared that it has not only been granted for Christ's sake to believe in him, Philippians chapter 1, but also to suffer for his sake. He would share in 2 Timothy chapter 3, indeed, those who desire to live godly will be persecuted. It is coming. We're not to be surprised at the fiery ordeal, Peter writes, that comes upon you for your testing as though some strange thing were happening. There's going to be difficulties. There's going to be considerable opposition to the work of God. But yet within that, we need to not give ourselves over to that, but allow God to encourage us that we would press on and continue in the work for his glory. Those who delight in his name be exalted, right? So then back in our passage, they were experiencing considerable opposition, great distress, great evil. And notice, end of verse 3, they were in reproach. And they said to me, the remnant of the province who survived the captivity are in great distress and reproach. The term translated reproach is translated elsewhere in the scriptures. Contempt, disgrace, reproaches, scorn, shame, taunting. You know what? Satan does these things to try to discourage the servants of God. And folks, we need to be on the lookout, as was Nehemiah, for those servants who are discouraged or being discouraged, that they would be encouraged and they would complete the tasks and not give up that God has given them to do. These Jews were being shamed, disgraced, taunted. Why? Well, later on in Nehemiah, we're going to see clearly that the enemies of God wanted to thwart the work of God, and so they were approaching God's people, trying to discourage them to quit the work. You see this in some passages. Let me share some passages in Nehemiah that we'll see a little bit of a picture of it, and then we'll see it when we get into them over the next few weeks. Look at chapter 2, verse 17. And this is after Nehemiah wisely and secretly inspects the walls at night. Nehemiah chapter 2, verse 17. Then I said to them, you see the bad situation we are in, that Jerusalem is desolate. Its gates are burned by fire. Come, let us rebuild the wall of Jerusalem that we may no longer be a reproach. You know, walls protect us from enemies. And in some people's lives, the walls are down because we're not trusting the Lord. And we're going to see that we need to trust him completely and rely on him. And here, these physical walls of Jerusalem, the city that was where the Lord has chosen to dwell, is in ruins. And we have that with some people, too. Where God has chosen to dwell, their lives are in ruins, and they need to be reconstructed. But sin has to be dealt with, as we will see. So then he says, let's take care of this, rebuild the wall, that we will no longer be a reproach. Obviously, the enemies of God were saying, look at these Jews, you're God's people, look at your walls, your city's a wreck. What do we see in chapter 4? Notice in chapter 4 of Nehemiah, this is after a specific instance of the Jews being reproached as they're trying to rebuild. They're trying to rebuild.
If you've just joined us, you've been listening to Equipping the Saints with Greg Lundstedt. You can hear today's message again by visiting our website, etsradio.org. That's etsradio.org. CDs of today's message or other messages are available at our website as well. And as a part of the Ministry of Equipping the Saints, all our audio resources are available at no cost to you, thanks to the Lord's provision through the faithful support of friends of this broadcast. To order your complimentary CD, call us toll-free, 1-800-596-9144. That's 800-596-9144. If you prefer to request your complimentary CD by email, our email address is contact@etsradio.org. Well, Greg, we've only scratched the surface of these four verses of Nehemiah.
Yes, Dave, but as we're going to see in our next broadcast, Nehemiah is extremely concerned about the state of God's work in Jerusalem. And as we look at his concern, this just might reveal where our hearts are concerning the work of the Lord in us. So please make plans to join us in our next broadcast as we continue this exciting study in the book of Nehemiah.
As we close today's broadcast, it's our prayer that the Word of God has done its work in your life and that you've been challenged and encouraged to follow Christ more closely. If you're receiving spiritual benefit from equipping the saints, would you prayerfully consider sending a gift today? Every gift makes a difference. No gift is too small, and every dollar is put right back into the ministry. To send a gift to Equipping the Saints, call us toll-free at 1-800-596-9144. That's 800-596-9144. If you prefer to donate online, our web address is etsradio.org. That's etsradio.org. Well, we hope you'll make plans to join us again next time, right here for another edition of Equipping the Saints.